There's a stack of empties outside my bedroom down the hallway.
Got it. I strode that way, taking the box and paper along. My boots seemed twice as loud as normal on her hardwood floors. There were two rooms down the narrow hall. On the right was her bedroom. The mattress rested on the floor, the blankets unmade. Three suitcases were pushed against the far wall, open and overflowing. Winslow seemed so put together. Did it bother her living in a mess? Because it sure as hell would have bothered me. Opposite her room was another crammed with boxes. I added mine to the short stack of flattened cardboard, then returned to the kitchen. The dishwasher was running. Wynne had retreated to the living room. Beside her, on the center cushion of the leather couch, was the purse she'd carried in earlier, and a stack of files. The couch was the only piece of furniture in the room, maybe in the whole house. It sat at an odd angle beneath the center light fixture. Beside it was an unopened box that Wynne had shoved beside an armrest to use as a makeshift end table. Had her ex taken the other furniture? Was it still being moved? I was about to ask when a manila file folder caught my eye from beneath her purse. Walking closer, I read the name on the tab. Harmony Hart. The girl I'd found at the base of Indigo Ridge. There were likely photos in that folder. Photos of the images forever burned into my brain. The dark hair matted with blood. The limbs askew. The blood. The death. You're looking into the suicides, I said.
Yes.
Why?
Because I need to.
They're suicides, Wynne. She stayed quiet, not agreeing or disagreeing. It's sad, I said. Horrific. I get why you want to find a different explanation. Most outsiders do.
You know, you keep reminding me that I'm new in town, but I'm not all that new. I've spent a lot of time here, especially when I was a kid. This was my father's hometown.
There's a difference between visiting Quincy and living in Quincy.
Well, I live here now.
Yes, you do. And that made this insatiable attraction to her exponentially more complicated. Wynne rose up and leaned over the back of the couch, peering toward the window that overlooked the porch. The ex was still there, his face glued to his phone and his fingers flying over its screen.
He's still here,
she grumbled with an eye roll.
What are you doing here, anyway?
I plucked her phone from the back pocket of my jeans. This was at my place.
Damn.
She stood and crossed the room, taking it from my hand. Then she tossed it in the general direction of her purse, like she didn't care if it vanished again.
It must have fallen out of my pocket. I'm a bit scattered right now, but I would have tracked it down eventually.
You don't need it?
Not really. It's my personal cell, the one Skylar's been calling.
She went to the couch, plopping down in the same seat.
You're welcome to sit down, but if you need to go, it's fine.
The only thing waiting for me at home was a stack of bills to pay. This woman was far more entertaining than hours spent in my office, so I took the seat beside her, leaving enough space to keep my dick from getting any ideas. So, what was the reason you called it off? Your engagement? It was none of my business, but I was asking anyway. Maybe if I understood her better, I'd get her off my mind. That, and go a few years without kissing her. Days later, and the temptation of her lips was as powerful as ever. She was as captivating as she was dangerous.
He's not the man I thought he was,
she said. The asshole had probably been fucking someone else. Idiot. Sorry.
It's better now than if we'd actually gotten married.
True. Like Skylar knew we were talking about him, the doorbell rang. Winslow's nostrils flared.
He's stubborn.
Why is he here?
Your guess is as good as mine. He didn't speak to me after he moved out. Then he heard through some mutual friends I was moving to Quincy and he had concerns. He might claim to be here about our house, but the ball's in his court. And our realtor knows the best way to reach me is email.
What were his concerns?
Skylar is used to getting what he wants. I think he expected me to pine after him. Maybe he thought I'd forgive him. Maybe beg for him to come back. Hell if I know. He probably doesn't like the fact that I won't give him any more of my time. He had 8 years, and I won't beg any man.
That wasn't exactly true. She'd begged in the back seat of my truck when I'd had my finger on her clit, and she'd wanted to come. My cock twitched. "Want to mess with him some?" I asked.
"What do you have in mind?"
I grinned. "Be right back." Skyler's face whipped to mine when I opened the front door. He'd been on his phone again. I jerked up my chin, passed him for the stairs, and walked to my truck. Earlier today, I'd stopped by the grocery store for a few things. Winslow had been on my mind when I'd passed the condoms, so I'd grabbed a box on a whim. Or maybe a wish. With the condoms in my hand, I shut the truck door and returned to the house. Skyler spotted them instantly, his jaw clenched. "Still here? Have a good night." I shot him a smirk, then walked through the door and flipped the deadbolt. Wynn sat up straighter as I rejoined her on the couch, both of us listening. Footsteps descended the porch stairs. Moments later, a truck's engine started.
"That was entirely too satisfying," she laughed. "Thanks."
"Welcome." This was the moment when I was clear to leave, but instead, I relaxed deeper into the couch, tossing an arm over the back. Wynn's eyes landed on the box of condoms in my hand.
"Can I ask you something?"
"If I said no, would you ask me anyway?"
"Yes."
I chuckled. "Shoot."
"You thought I was a tourist at Willie's. Is that your thing? Tourists?"
"My thing is beautiful women. But, yeah, it's less complicated if they don't live here. Fewer expectations." She hummed.
"Why'd you kiss me at your house?"
"Why'd you kiss me back?" The corner of her mouth turned up.
"Who are the condoms for?"
"You." There was no point in lying. She was stuck in my head. Winslow was a woman apart, in beauty, in brains, in sex appeal. Her confidence was as alluring as those freckles across her nose. In one graceful move, she lifted and closed the gap between us. Her legs swung over my lap, her knees settling outside my thighs. Her hands, dainty but powerful, slid up the smooth cotton of my charcoal t-shirt. Then she pressed her center into my swelling cock, rubbing her core against my belt buckle. "Give me your mouth," I ordered. She bent, her lips grazing mine. I clasped a hand around her head, holding her to me as I surged, my tongue sliding between her teeth. Wynn gasped, her hips banging into mine. Any hope of me walking out of here before dark evaporated.
Chapter 7. Winslow. A cry lodged in my throat as I jolted awake. Sweat beaded at my temples. I squeezed my eyes shut, dragging in a breath to calm my racing heart, using every fragment of mental fortitude to shove the nightmare from my mind. My parents used to say, "It's just a bad dream, Winnie." This wasn't a dream. The blood, the mutilation, was real. The lifeless eyes, the scream, my own, that still rang in my ears 5 years later. Would these nightmares ever stop? They'd been worse since moving here. They'd haunted me almost every night. Beside me, Griffin shifted. The sheet he'd pulled over us after the last tumble dipped lower, revealing the sculpted contours of his muscled back, the broad shoulders, the dimples just above his ass. I slipped out from beneath the cotton and stood from the mattress, still on the floor. On tiptoes, I padded out of the room, easing the door closed behind me. My clothes from work were strewn alongside Griffin's in the living room. I snagged his t-shirt, pressing it to my nose. It smelled of laundry soap and the masculine, natural spice of the man who'd made me see stars last night. I breathed it in again, drawing comfort from the scent, before pulling it over my head. The shirt hit me on my upper thighs and skimmed below my bottom, but at least I was covered in case one of my neighbors was awake too. A favorite part of this house was the living room's bay window. A narrow bench seat was built beside the glass, not wide enough for lounging, but enough to sit and stare into the night. There was a comfort in the tranquility of this street, peace in the silence of sleepy homes and glowing porch lights. The nightmare tapped at my temple, begging for attention. I pushed it away and studied Griffin's truck instead, tracing the Eden Ranch brand on the passenger door with my gaze. Then I closed my eyes and pictured him on my couch, naked, his washboard abs bunched, his hips thrusting, his cock like velvet and steel. Focusing on sex probably wasn't the right way to cope with my past, but for tonight, I didn't care about right. I just wanted the nightmare gone. So I imagined Griffin's face as he came, the clench of his stubbled jaw and the bulge of his biceps as his body shook through its release. We'd fucked hard on the couch. Afterward, I'd expected him to leave, but he'd carried me to my bedroom, and if I'd thought the sex had been good before, with a little space to move, he'd shown me the power of that large body. Orgasm after orgasm, I'd practically blacked out after the last round. A smile tugged at the corner of my mouth. Sleeping with him was undoubtedly a stupid decision. An addicting, toe-curling stupid decision. Self-control was typically my specialty, but when it came to him, the rules didn't seem to apply. Griffin Eden was tantalizing, magnetic, rugged and bold, and naked in my bed. I pulled my knees up, stretching his shirt over my calves. Three yawns were my body's way of reminding me just how tired it was, but I didn't want to sleep. The dream would come back. It lingered too close to the surface. So with my temple to the window, I stared into the darkness, alone. The nightmare, a memory, always left me feeling alone. My breath fogged the glass and the chill from the house brought goosebumps to my forearms. I was about to give in, to sneak into my bedroom for a hot shower, when the shuffle of bare feet filled the room. Griffin emerged from the hallway, the sheet wrapped around his narrow waist. His steps slowed when he spotted me in the window wearing his shirt.
You okay?
Just couldn't sleep, I lied. No one knew about my nightmares, not even Skylar. He'd never asked why I woke up in the middle of the night, only that when I did, not to turn on a light. It might wake him up and he had work. Griffin nodded and walked to his jeans, dropping the sheet to pull on his pants one thick, strong leg at a time. He left the top button undone and the belt hanging open as he strode my way, dragging a hand through his disheveled chocolate hair. I'd tousled it myself earlier, holding onto it as he'd sucked my nipples into his talented mouth.
I'd better get going.
His deep voice was fogged with sleep, and the rumble sent a shiver down my spine. Okay, I nodded, taking in his bare chest. The dusting of hair on his pecs was too tempting, and I raised a hand, my fingers brushing through the coarse strands. His heartbeat was so solid and strong, like everything else about this man.
Are you going to give me my shirt?
Are you going to take it? His hands went to the hem, lifting it up and over my head. Then he smirked as he put it on his own body, covering up the hard stomach and the sculpted V at his hips. This man was better than any fantasy, better than any romance novel hero or movie star, better than any lover who'd ever taken me to bed. Not that I'd had many. The cold air from the window skated over my naked skin, but I didn't move from the bench. I waited while Griffin grabbed the sheet and brought it over, wrapping it around my shoulders before finding his boots amid the boxes. An awkward quiet settled in the room. Casual hookups were completely out of character for me. Even in my early 20s, the only men I'd been with had been boyfriends. Ben Skylar. I wasn't sure what to say. I wasn't sure what to do. So I stayed put, listening to Griffin buckle his belt. It had been easier at the bar to simply get in my car and drive away. Mom had told me once that I wasn't the sleeping around type. I was like her, a woman who loved. Did it make Mom wrong that I liked this fling with Griffin? There was no love between us, simply lust. I didn't want Mom to be wrong about anything. I wanted her to remain a perfect memory, the beautiful woman who'd loved me before the nightmare.
Hey.
Griffin's hand came to my shoulder, his thumb drawing a circle on top of the sheet.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I swallowed the lump in my throat. Tired.
You sure?
I nodded and slid off the bench's ledge. Thanks for staying when Skylar was here.
Is he going to be a problem?
I don't know. But after Griffin's display with the condoms, I doubted I'd see Skylar again.
So, this.
He gestured between us.
Probably not a great idea if it becomes a regular thing. I'm busy.
Busy. That term grated on my nerves, but it didn't matter. I was busy, too. Agreed. The orgasms had been out of this world, but I was too raw for any sort of relationship, even if it was only for sex.
Good.
He breathed like he'd expected me to argue.
Lock up behind me.
I was the chief of police, I had a black belt in karate, and I knew my way around a pistol, yet this man wanted to assert his protectiveness. I hated that I liked it. See you around, Griffin.
Bye, Wynn.
He waved once, then headed for the door. I waited beside the window, watching until his truck disappeared down the block. Then I locked the door and went to the bedroom. The air smelled like Griffin and sex. The fitted sheet on the mattress was rumpled and my comforter had been kicked to the foot of the bed. The black alarm clock on the floor beside a discarded pillow showed it was 3:30. There was no way I'd get back to sleep, not now. So I dropped the sheet and went to the bathroom for a scalding shower. Dressed in jeans and the black button-down shirt that every officer wore as part of their uniform, I headed to the station. The night shift was just a skeleton crew, so it was quiet when I parked in my reserved space. The dispatcher at the desk jerked in surprise when I walked through the door.
Hi, Chief.
Good morning, I smiled. Hope you guys have some coffee on.
Just brewed a fresh pot.
He nodded, then buzzed me in so I wouldn't have to use my key. With a steaming mug in hand, I retreated to my office, where stacks of files from yesterday were waiting, and I wasted no time diving in. The shift change at 6 was a bustle of activity, and more than one officer gave me a wide-eyed look when I emerged from my office to join them in the bullpen. Conversation was stunted, laughter limited. I listened in as the night shift gave their summary report, then returned to the solitude of my office so they could have a few minutes without the boss eavesdropping. Maybe one day they'd welcome me into their huddle. Maybe one day it wouldn't bother me that they didn't. Knock, knock. Janice poked her head inside my office. Good morning. Hi, I smiled and waved her in. You okay? She asked, studying my face. I opened my mouth to lie, but a question came out instead. Can I confess something? Sure. She took a seat across from my desk, the folder she'd brought along resting on her lap. This is my first job as the boss. You probably know that already. She nodded. Yes. Is it that obvious that I haven't done this before? No, but we all read the paper. My lip curled. The reporter had completely omitted my resume, making it seem like my only qualification was the last name Covington. I'm used to being in the bullpen, not in an office. I'm used to being in on the conversations, not on the receiving ends of the official reports. I'm used to being included. I didn't expect it to be so jarring, the difference between being an officer and being the chief. That's understandable. Janice gave me a soft smile, but didn't offer any advice. There was none to give. I wasn't an officer. I was the chief. The line between the two was necessary, even if that put me on one side alone. Anyway, I waved it off and pointed to the folder. What do you have for me? The autopsy came in from the medical examiner for Lily Green. I thought you'd want to see it before I put it on Alan's desk. Yes, please. Alan was the officer officially assigned to Lily Green's death, though he hadn't seemed to mind my interference. In a way, he'd almost seemed relieved when I'd told him I was going to be taking an active role. And when I'd offered to tell Melina Green of her daughter's death, he'd instantly agreed. Janice handed over the report, then went through a short list of items that needed to be addressed. Afterward, she left me to the autopsy. It was almost exactly as I'd anticipated. The cause of death was extreme bodily trauma due to a fall. There'd been no substances in her blood, no marks or wounds beyond those caused by the impact. The only note of interest was Lily's sexual activity. The examiner noted that she'd likely had sex within 24 hours prior to her death, because there'd been lubricant residue on her skin, though no semen. Huh. I pulled out my notepad for the case, flipping through my notes. Melina had told me that Lily hadn't had a boyfriend when I'd asked. Maybe she hadn't known? If Lily had been seeing someone, would her boyfriend have insight into her mental state? Had he been with her before her death, driving her car? Had he taken her to those deserted gravel roads along the Edens Ranch? As much as I wanted to hunt down answers to those questions, they'd have to wait. My day was filled with meetings and phone calls. Another unexpected side effect from being the chief. I hadn't expected the meetings, and transitioning from investigations to management was going to take some getting used to. Whatever grace the staff and community had given me during my first week was gone because the administrative work came in a flood. Finally, around 4 o'clock, I hit my first lull of the day. My calendar was clear until tomorrow, and though there were emails to return, I needed to get away from this desk. So I grabbed my purse and escaped the station. The route to Melina Green's house was familiar, and when I parked in front of her white picket fence, she was kneeling on the grass beside a flower bed. "Afternoon," I called. She looked over her shoulder, her blonde hair tied in a braid beneath a straw hat. She gave me a shaky smile and stood, coming over as I opened her gate. "Hi, Winnie. How are you?" I opened my arms and she walked right into my embrace. "Minute by minute, that's what you told me, right? Minute by minute." It was something Poppy had told me after my parents had died. I'd asked her how to deal with the sort of pain that tore through every heartbeat. "What are you working on?" I asked, letting her go. "Weeding. I was tempted to stay in my pajamas all day, but..." Unshed tears glistened in her eyes. "I need to do something, anything, but cry." "I can understand that. Why don't you put me to work?" We spent the next 30 minutes cleaning 2 flower beds. The afternoon sun was hot on my black shirt, but I sat beside Melina, plucking shoots of grass and baby thistles as sweat dampened my brow. "I need to ask you a question about Lily. Would you mind?" "No." She shook her head, her eyes focused on the trowel in her hand and the weeds she chopped at the root. The blade sank into the earth with a gritty slice. She'd get through this loss by keeping busy. I'd done the same. Because when you were busy, there was less time to think, less time to hurt. Until the night when the memories crept into your sleep. "You said she didn't have a boyfriend, but could she have been seeing someone new? Maybe a first or second date with a guy?" "Not that I know of. Why?" "I'm just trying to find out who she spent time with." Normally, I believed in full transparency, but until I had more answers about Lily and whoever she'd been with before her death, I didn't want to leave Melina with unanswered questions. "Lily liked to head downtown on Friday and Saturday nights with her friends. They usually met up at one of the bars. I always felt like I was walking a fine line. She lived here, and I loved that she lived here. But she was an adult, so I tried to keep my mouth shut about the partying. If Lily was like most 21-year-old women, she'd probably met a guy at the bar. Hell, I was 30 and had done the same with Griffin." "I didn't ask too many questions," Melina continued. "I tried not to pester her about coming home before 2. Maybe that was my mistake. But she was young, and once, a long time ago, I was young too." The tears began to fall, and Melina did her best to wipe them dry with her garden gloves, leaving streaks of dirt on her cheeks. She pulled off her gloves. "I'd better wash up." "Of course." When she excused herself to go inside, I saw myself out of the yard. Any other questions would have to wait, but Melina had given me a place to start. I'd spoken to many of Lily's friends, but I hadn't asked about her at the local bars. They would be my next stop. But first, before the sun went down, I wanted to pay Indigo Ridge one more visit. Leaving Melina's house, I drove toward the mountains, navigating the gravel path to Indigo Ridge. My shoes weren't the best for hiking, but I parked at the base of the trail and started my climb anyway. Step by step, I made my way up the dirt path. I was panting and sticky by the time I reached the top. The breeze that threaded around the rocks cooled the sweat between my shoulder blades. Inching to the edge of the trail, I leaned forward to stare over the cliff. Her body wasn't on the jagged rocks below, but I could still picture it there. Her blonde hair, That blood-soaked dress. One jump. One step. That was all it would take. One trip. One fall. And a life shattered.
What the fuck are you doing?
A hand clamped over my elbow and dragged me away from the edge. I whirled around, my heart in my throat, as I threw a fist toward Griffin's nose. I managed to stop the punch before it landed, but just barely. My knuckles grazed his skin, and his eyes widened that I'd moved that fast.
Jesus, Wynn.
He released my elbow.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Me? What the fuck is wrong with you? You scared the shit out of me. I could have fallen.
Then don't stand so goddamn close to the edge.
He bellowed, dragging a hand through that thick hair.
Fuck, we don't need you having an accident.
This should be blocked off, I barked, pressing a hand to my thrashing heart.
That's what I'm doing here.
He jerked his thumb toward the trail.
I came up here to build a fence along the path and spotted your rig. Followed you up here just in time to see you leaning over the edge.
I frowned up at his scowl. I was just looking.
Look from back here.
He grabbed my arm again, hauling me back against him.
I can't find your body down there, too.
The plea in his blue gaze, the fear in his expression, chased away any anger, and my shoulders slumped. Okay, sorry. He blew out a long breath, shaking away his frustration.
It's all right. Why are you looking?
I don't know, I admitted. I know you think it was suicide. I don't even know what to think myself. Something feels off, and I need to figure out what. For Lily. For her mother. Sometimes when I can't make sense of something, I start at the end and work my way backward to the beginning. So I'd stand here until I could retrace her steps. Which was what I did. I stood there, staring out to the nothing beyond the trail. Griffin stood beside me, unspeaking, unmoving. He simply stood at my side while I thought. She'd come up here, terrified, desperate, likely alone. I took one step closer to the edge. Griffin grabbed my hand, holding it tight. I let him be my tether as I glanced over the cliff, putting myself in Lily's place. She'd had a good job. She'd had loving parents. She'd had friends in Quincy. Something had pushed her over this edge. A broken heart?
What?
Griffin asked, pulling me away from the edge once more. Nothing, I muttered. The autopsy was confidential, and Griffin hadn't earned the details. I'd like to know what Lily was doing up to the time of her death. If she'd been hanging out with friends, a boyfriend, where would someone her age hang out on a Sunday night?
Willie's,
he answered. Would you have noticed her if she'd come in?
You and I were the only people there.
Anywhere else? He rubbed that strong jaw.
The bars downtown. The younger crowd usually hangs there in the summers with the tourists. And you're in luck.
Am I? Why? He took my arm, tugging me yet another step away from the cliff.
I was just thinking about heading downtown myself.
Oh, were you? I raised my eyebrows. I thought you were going to put up a fence on this trail.
Change of plan.
Chapter 8. Griffin.
You don't need to come with me. Wynn paused outside Big Sam's saloon. Aren't you busy?
Yes, I was busy, but I grabbed the door's handle and opened it for her anyway. After you. She frowned, but walked inside. Then I was forgotten as she soaked in every detail, from the wagon wheel chandeliers to the seams in the wood-paneled walls. The owners had done a major remodel about 10 years ago. They'd moved to Quincy from Texas, and the longhorns they'd brought along were hanging behind the bar. The tables were whiskey barrels with glass tops. The stools were upholstered in black and white cowhide. They were playing up the Western theme for the tourists, and country music crooned from the jukebox in the corner. I loathed Big Sam's.
It's packed, she said, scanning the room.
Most days are in the summer. A few familiar faces jumped out from the crowd. And as we walked to the bar, I lifted a hand to wave at one of the guys who worked at the hardware store. I jerked my chin to the bartender as he came over, his bald head catching the glare from the light that reflected off the mirrored liquor shelves. Hey, John.
Griffin.
He reached over the bar to shake my hand. John had trimmed his white beard since the last time I'd stopped in about a month ago. It brushed against his heart instead of his protruding beer belly.
What brings you in?
I nodded to Wynn. John, this is Winslow Covington. The new chief, he held his hand out to Win. Welcome to Quincy.
Thanks. She shook his hand, then slid onto a stool. Mind if I ask you a few questions?
It depends on the questions. I took the seat beside her, and before she could launch into her questions, I ordered a beer. Bud Light for me, John. Vodka tonic for the chief.
I'm on duty, she muttered as he walked away.
Then don't drink it. She shot me that stern frown again. It, like everything else with this woman, was frustratingly sexy.
This is quite the place.
It used to be one of the Eden family businesses. My great uncle was Big Sam. The new owners hadn't changed the name, probably because it went with their cheesy theme, but that was about the only thing left from the bar it had once been.
Used to be.
Sam was more about the drinking than he was about running a business. He sold it to the current owners before it went under.
Ah, is John one of the owners?
No, the manager. But if Lily was here Sunday night, he's your best bet at getting information. He works most weekends.
Can't I just ask him? Why did you order us a drink?
I leaned in closer, my shoulder brushing hers. Bartenders in small towns always know what's going on. They hear the gossip. They see the excitement, but they also protect their own. John's a good guy, but he doesn't know you, and he doesn't trust outsiders. She gritted her teeth.
Do you have to keep calling me that?
It's what you are. Want to fit in? Sit here with me. Order a drink. Leave him a decent tip. You want to stop being an outsider, then get to know the community.
Fine,
she sighed as John returned with our drinks.
Thank you.
He nodded as she lifted the glass to her lips, sending me a glare over the rim. I grinned and sipped my beer.
So, what are these questions?
John asked, leaning a hip against the bar.
I'm trying to learn more about Lily Green. She was—
I know who she was.
Wynn stiffened at his sharp tone.
Do you remember seeing her here on Saturday or Sunday night?
No, she wasn't here.
Did she come in often? Her mother said that since she turned 21, she came to the bars often on the weekends.
John shrugged.
No more than any of the other kids around here. They come down, have a few drinks, and play pool, mix with the tourists.
Was there anyone in particular you saw Lily with more than once?
Yeah,
he nodded.
Her regular group of friends.
Who Winslow would have known had she been from here. It was a dig on John's part. He could have just as easily rattled off the list of friends' names. But he didn't need to, because Wynn did it for him.
Franny Jones, Serena Miles, Connor Himmel, Henry Jacks, Bailey Kennedy, Clarissa Fitzgerald, those friends?
I took a drink to hide my smile as the smug expression vanished from John's face.
Yeah,
he muttered.
Did you notice Lily with anyone else? She asked. Like a boyfriend?
No, she wasn't that sort of girl. She'd come down, have a drink or two, always responsible about calling a cab or catching a ride with a designated driver. I can't think of a time when she left here with a guy.
A crease formed between Wynn's eyebrows, like she was disappointed in that answer. What was she after? Connor would know if Lily had been seeing someone. So would Melina.
Anything else?
John asked.
I need to check on the other tables.
No, thank you. I appreciate the help, and it was nice to meet you.
Same.
John tapped on the bar, then left to take another order. What are you after? I asked, keeping my voice low.
Like I said on the ridge, I just want to retrace her steps and figure out what she was doing before she died. But sounds like she wasn't here.
John would know. Winslow took another drink, then dug through her pocket, pulling out a 20.
Bye, Griffin.
She slapped the cash on the bar and headed for the door. I ditched my beer and followed, catching up to her before she'd even stepped outside. Let's head to the old mill. Maybe she went there.
I don't need an escort,
she said, but fell in step beside me down the sidewalk. The two bars on Main bookend the touristy section of Quincy. The Eloise Inn was almost exactly in the middle. Want to know why?
Because there's an ordinance that requires at least 400 yards between any establishments with a liquor license.
I grinned at the sassy smirk on her pretty mouth. You've done some research.
No, I've just been here many, many times. Pops has lived here his entire adult life and loves to tell stories. I know a lot about Quincy, even if I don't know the people yet. Even if I'm an outsider.
Oh, did she hate that word. I guess in her shoes, I'd hate it too. The ordinance was my great-great-grandmother's idea, I told her as we made our way across those 400 yards toward the old mill. My great-great-grandfather founded Quincy. Our family has lived here ever since. The running joke in town is that you can't throw a rock without hitting an Eden. With aunts, uncles, and cousins, I had countless relatives living in town. My parents had taken the unofficial helm of the family. Most of the businesses that had been started by my great-great-grandfather and his descendants had funneled down to my grandfather. He'd then passed them to my father. Some of my other relatives were entrepreneurs in town, but for the most part, my parents, my siblings, or I owned and operated most of the businesses with the Eden name. Old Mill was the first bar in Quincy, I said. Started shortly after the town was founded. The story goes that my great-great-grandmother allowed my great-great-grandfather to open the bar, but only if the bartender was employed by her. That way she could set the rules.
The rules, like how many drinks he could have?
I nodded, and how late to serve him. But she was worried that someone else would come in and open another bar. According to family rumor, she was a fairly shrewd businesswoman herself, so she suggested the ordinance, and since the Edens were pretty much in charge at the time,
it passed.
Exactly. The town was only 2 blocks at that time. She figured it would take 100 years for it to double in size. A 400-yard radius not only gave her control of the alcohol in town, but control over her husband's drinking habits. Wynne smiled.
And it hasn't changed?
Nope. The town grew, but that ordinance stuck around.
Which makes sense why Willie's isn't on Main.
It's not long enough, so they established it 5 blocks off Main, and it became the locals' hangout. And the place where I'd never expected to meet this intriguing creation. We passed 2 men, tourists based on their polo shirts, jeans, and unscuffed boots. They both looked Wynne up and down. It wasn't subtle, and her mouth pressed into a line as she ignored them. Her eyes aimed forward. Brave men, not only because she was wearing a gun, but because I was a possessive bastard. With one glare from me, they each dropped their eyes to the sidewalk. That would always be a problem with Wynne. She was too beautiful. You didn't expect to see a woman so stunning walking down the streets of Quincy. Her hair was down today, straight and long as it draped down her spine. Without sunglasses to shield her eyes, those blue irises sparkled beneath the afternoon sun. We reached an intersection, and she checked both ways before crossing the street and marching to the bar. Her shoulders were square and her serious face in place as she opened the door. Old Mill wasn't the over-the-top scene that was Big Sam's. It was more of a sports bar, and if I wasn't up for Willie's, I came here to catch a game and have a drink. Flat screens were mounted between neon beer signs. 3 keno machines hugged the wall just inside the door. Above them hung a framed Quincy Cowboys jersey. 2 different baseball games were playing tonight, the announcer's voices muted through the bar's sound system.
Does your family still own this place?
She asked as we walked toward the bar. Not anymore. My parents sold it to Chris when I was a kid.
Who's Chris?
I pointed to the bartender.
Is there another ordinance in Quincy requiring all bartenders to have bushy white beards?
Not that I know of. I chuckled and pulled out a stool for her at the bar before taking my own. Hey, Chris. Griff, he nodded to me, then held his hand out to Wynne. You're Covey's granddaughter, right?
I am.
She fit her delicate hand into his meaty grip.
Winslow, nice to meet you.
Say, what brings you 2 in? Wynne's got a few questions for you, but how about a beer first? Whatever's on tap. Surprise us. You got it. Chris wouldn't be gruff like John, who, compared to Willie, was as welcoming as a doormat. Of the regular 3 bartenders in town, Chris was the nicest guy. Wynne didn't need me here, but I was having a hard time walking away. Her questions for Chris were the same ones she'd asked John. Was Lily here on Saturday or Sunday? Do you remember seeing her with the same guy more than once? Did she have a boyfriend? Chris's answers were the same as we'd gotten at Big Sam's. Neither of us finished our beers, and when she went to pay, I beat her to it. With a wave goodbye to Chris, we retreated to our vehicles on the opposite end of Main. You talked to all of Lily's friends, didn't you? I asked.
I did. I hoped that one of them might have noticed something wrong, but they were all as shocked as Melina.
Connor's broken up about it. I think he might have had feelings for her.
Really?
I don't think she returned those feelings. He got shoved into the friend zone a long time ago. Her shoulders fell. You think she had a boyfriend, don't you? She stayed quiet. That was a yes. Maybe Lily had hooked up with the mystery guy before she died. But who? Now my own curiosity was racing down the block. If Lily had been seeing someone, Connor would have known about it. Unless Lily had hidden a relationship to spare his feelings. Maybe she was sleeping with someone who worked at the bank with her, I said.
I never said she was sleeping with anyone.
I gave Wynne a knowing look. You didn't have to.
Why did you come to town with me?
She crossed her arms.
You told me to back off. You told me to drop this, remember?
I remember. But for Melina's sake, for Connor's, I respect that you're trying to give them more of an explanation.
Oh.
Her arms fell to her sides.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye, Griffin.
Before she could climb into her SUV and disappear, I walked to the passenger side of her Durango.
What are you doing?
She narrowed her eyes through the window. Might as well drive together to Willie's.
How did you know I was going to Willie's?
I chuckled. Do you want me to drive instead?
No.
She huffed, but unlocked the doors. The 5 blocks to Willie's was too short. The inside of her car reminded me of her bed. The moment we pulled into the parking lot, the temperature in the cab spiked. Attraction crackled between us like a spark. Would I ever come to Willie's and not picture her in my truck? Probably not. Winslow parked and was out of the car so fast she practically jogged to the door. Her cheeks were flushed when I caught up. Shuffleboard? I nudged her elbow as I opened the door.
No.
That pretty flush deepened.
I'm here on official business, and you said it yourself this morning. Not a good thing to repeat. You're a busy man.
I said a lot of stupid things. Griff! Willie stood behind the bar, his scowl fixed firmly in place as we walked in.
Hi, Willie.
Wynne didn't bother taking a seat, and what I'd told her about making nice at the other bars had been forgotten. Or maybe she knew ordering a drink and making pleasantries with Willie would be a waste of time. She launched into her questions about Lily, and when she received a series of grunted no's, she thanked him for his time. Wynne turned, ready to leave, when the door opened and a familiar face walked into the bar.
Harrison, my Uncle Briggs walked over, his hand extended. What's going on, brother? I didn't know you were coming into town tonight.
Fuck. My stomach dropped. Wynne looked between the two of us.
Griffin, I clapped my hand on his shoulder.
I'm Griffin, Uncle Briggs. He studied my face, confusion clouding his eyes. He looked normal in jeans and a red shirt, but he was wearing 2 different boots, one round toe and the other square. A set of keys dangled from one hand.
What are you up to? I asked. Thought I'd grab a beer.
His forehead was furrowed, still trying to figure out how I wasn't my father.
I'll buy. I nodded for Briggs to head to the bar, then faced Wynne. I'm going to stay here with him.
Sure.
She looked to my uncle, her eyes softening.
Have a good night, Griff.
Bye, Wynne.
As she walked to the door, I joined my uncle at the bar. He called me by my father's name 3 times in the hour we sat and sipped a beer. He remembered Willie just fine, but kept giving me strange looks.
I'd better get home, I told him. Mind if I hitch a ride with you? I haven't seen your place in ages. You were just there last week.
Huh? That's right, my bad. I paid Willie, then snatched Briggs's truck keys. How about I drive? I didn't finish my beer.
Okay.
He shrugged and led the way to the parking lot where his old Chevy truck waited. I climbed behind the wheel, cringing at the scent in the cab. There was a coffee tumbler in the cup holder, and my guess was that the creamer he'd added had long since curdled. With the windows rolled down, I drove to the ranch, passing the gravel road that I'd been on earlier today. The place where I'd found Wynne's car. The next turnoff led to the backside of Indigo Ridge, and as we made our way up the mountain foothills, I stole a few glances at Briggs. He looked older today than I'd ever seen. The skin on his cheeks sagged slightly. The whiskers were white. Briggs was 5 years older than Dad and had lived his entire life on this ranch. He'd been there to help Dad build us kids a treehouse. He'd helped me break my first horse. When my grandfather had been ready to pass down the ranch and his business holdings to his sons, Briggs had chosen to let Dad take over. Management had never been his passion. He was content to have a bank account healthy with money he rarely spent and a simple life living on the land that owned his heart. Briggs's cabin was nestled in a grove of evergreens in arguably the prettiest meadow on the ranch. A stack of unevenly chopped firewood was scattered around the porch. An axe was propped up against the steps.
"Chopping wood?" I asked. Briggs nodded. "Getting a head start before winter."
"Good plan." Though I wasn't too keen on him running the stove if he couldn't manage to put on a matching pair of boots. I parked and picked up the travel mug, dumping the contents as we made our way to the house. With no idea what I'd find, I braced as I followed him inside. But the cabin was as clean and tidy as ever.
"How are things going on the ranch, Griffin?"
he asked, taking the cup from my hand and carting it to the sink. That was the first time he'd called me by my name tonight.
"Good. Busy. We're about done with fence repairs for the year." "That's always a good feeling," he chuckled. "Want to stay a while? Join me for dinner?"
"No, but thanks." I gave him a smile. "I'd better get on."
"Appreciate you swinging by."
"You're welcome." Did he remember even coming to the bar? God damn, this was hard. My heart clenched. His blue eyes were the same as those I met in the mirror each morning. He was the very best uncle a boy could have wished for. He'd treated Dad's children, me, like one of his own. Briggs had been married once, briefly, until she'd left him after their third anniversary. My siblings and I, my parents, had been his family. He hadn't missed a single one of my basketball or football games. He'd been present at every graduation. Seeing him like this, fuck, but it was hard.
"I'll see you soon,"
I waved goodbye, then let myself out. I was more than ready to go home. Except I didn't have a vehicle. It was downtown. Shit. I pulled out my phone and called Dad. "Hey, can you come pick me up and run me into town?"
"Now?"
He sounded like his mouth was full. "Yeah, now. I'm at Uncle Briggs's cabin."
"Where's your truck?"
"In town, and I need to talk to you."
"All right."
There was the shuffling of feet and a muffled exchange with my mother before the line went dead. I started walking down the road, making it about a mile before I heard the rumble of an engine and Dad's new pickup emerged from a bend in the trees. He had a drop of barbecue sauce on his shirt.
"Sorry to interrupt dinner."
"It's okay."
He turned the truck around, heading toward home.
"What's going on?"
I blew out a long breath, then told him about Briggs.
"Damn,"
he cursed, his hands tightening on the wheel.
"I'll talk to him."
"You need to do more than talk."
"I'll handle it."
"Maybe we should call Grandpa's doctor, see if we could get Briggs into a home or—"
"I said I'd handle it, Griffin,"
he snapped. Christ. I held up my hands.
"Fine."
Tension crept through the truck's cab, and when Dad pulled in beside my rig on Main, he didn't say a word as I climbed out. He reversed out from his spot and drove away before I'd even fished the keys from my pocket. I unlocked my truck and hopped in, slamming the door too hard. Damn it. Briggs had had a few episodes like this over the past year. It had started with mixing up a name at family dinner, but that happened all the time, right? Mom used to run through all our names before landing on the one kid in trouble. Except for Briggs, the small mistakes were becoming habit. He'd driven into town this winter, and Knox had stumbled upon his truck on Main. Briggs had forgotten where he was. 6 months ago, Talia had bumped into Briggs at the grocery store, and Briggs's shirt had been backward. But tonight had been the worst. He'd actually thought I was Dad. The entire time we'd been at Willie's. Maybe if my grandfather hadn't suffered from dementia, I wouldn't worry as much. but I'd been a teenager when Grandpa's mental health had deteriorated. I'd watched him become a ghost of the man I'd known. It had crushed Dad. Briggs, too. Now our family would go through it again. My stomach growled, forcing me out of my head. Leftovers waited for me at home. So did a pile of work. But as I drove down Main, my truck steered itself toward a little gray house with a red door. There was no time for this. The ranch didn't run itself, and I had shit to do. But I parked on the curb, spotting Wynn through the front window. She'd shed the black shirt she'd had on earlier for a plain white tank top. The straps of her black bra peeked out at her shoulders. Her hair was tied up in a ponytail, the ends swaying across her shoulders as she dragged a tall cardboard box down the hallway. When I rang the doorbell, I heard a loud thud, and then a pair of muted footsteps before the door flew open.
"Hi,"
she shoved a tendril of hair off her sweaty forehead.
"How's your uncle?"
"Not great," I admitted. "My grandfather had dementia, Alzheimer's. It didn't set in until he was in his 70s. It's happening earlier with Briggs."
"I'm sorry."
She waved me inside, closing the door behind us. I inspected the living room, as full of boxes as it had been this morning. "Are you unpacking?"
"Sort of. My bed frame arrived today."
"So you aren't planning on sleeping on the floor forever?"
"It was on back order. My mattress arrived before I moved, but not the frame."
"What about the one you had in Bozeman?"
"It was Skylar's."
Her lip curled.
"I left all of the furniture to start fresh."
"Ah," I nodded. "So where's the frame?"
"In the box. I just hauled it to the bedroom."
"Got tools?"
Yes.
She tapped the top of a box.
"I have a screwdriver somewhere. It's in one of these, or maybe a box in the office."
She'd spent an hour just finding her tools. Without a word, I strode outside to my truck, grabbing the small toolbox I kept under the back seat. When I came inside, Wynn was in the bedroom beside the frame's open cardboard box. "Instructions?" I asked. She pointed to the hardware pack and attached pamphlet.
"I can do it."
"I'll help."
"Why?"
I grinned. "So I can help you break in the bed."
"I thought you didn't want to do that again."
"I can make time for one more night. What do you say, Chief?" She picked up the instructions and handed them over.
"One more night."
Chapter 9. Winslow. Griffin's tongue swept inside my mouth, fluttering against mine before he broke away. Then he bent to pull on his boots. I stood back, watching as he trapped his hair beneath the faded black baseball hat he'd been wearing last night. The ends I'd been toying with before he'd climbed out of my bed curled at his nape. It took effort not to go to him, not to run my hands up his wide chest and beg for one more kiss. But I stayed on the armrest of the couch because if this was going to work, boundaries were key.
"See you around."
Griffin walked over and leaned in like he was about to kiss my forehead, but at the last second, pulled away, adjusting the brim of his hat. I shouldn't have been disappointed. Sweet gestures and forehead kisses weren't part of this relationship. We were enjoying casual sex, nothing more. Boundaries. "Bye." I followed him to the door and waited by the threshold as he went outside, his boots thudding on the porch stairs before he stepped onto the sidewalk, taking it with those long, easy strides. Watching him walk away had become part of my daily routine. He'd been coming here each night for a week. Each morning he'd leave before dawn, and I'd wonder if he'd come back, or if last night had been the last night. Some nights he'd come over early, not long after I'd gotten home from work. Other nights it would be after dark, and he'd find me unpacking a box. He'd interrupt my progress and carry me to the bedroom, which was why my living room was still full of cardboard and I continued living out of suitcases. The kitchen was unpacked, but little progress had been made elsewhere. The sex was distracting, brilliantly distracting. This fling had no chance of lasting, so the boxes could wait until Griffin and I fizzled out. He glanced over his shoulder as he rounded the hood of his truck, and even in the dark, I saw this sexy smirk on his lips. Yeah, he'd be back tonight. I wasn't the only one enjoying this. Closing the door, I waited for the rev of his truck's engine before retreating to my bedroom. The sheets were rumpled, and his scent, spice and leather and earth, clung to the air. I'd fallen asleep to that smell last night as I'd lain on his chest, my body limp and utterly sated. We'd gone wild last night. He'd worn me out so thoroughly I hadn't had a nightmare all week. If this new bed of mine could talk, it would scream, "Oh, God, Griff." What was it about him that had made it so easy to shed my inhibitions? With Skylar, I'd always felt reserved with sex. It had taken years to truly relax when we were in bed, and he hadn't been the most creative lover. Maybe it was different with Griffin because there were no strings, no pressure for a long-term commitment. Maybe because my own pleasure had become a priority. Maybe because Griffin made it a priority too. Damn that man. Griffin had a body built to please. His hands turned me into putty, his lips a shivering mess, his cock a wanton slave to his command. I smiled as I walked into the bathroom and turned on the shower. The warm water soothed some of my aching muscles. Since I'd moved to Quincy, I hadn't gone on one of my regular morning runs. I hadn't worked out, period, because sex had taken exercise's place. Maybe tomorrow, if I had the energy, if Griffin didn't keep me up until 1 or 2, I'd find my tennis shoes and run a few miles through my neighborhood. Or maybe I could try out the small gym at the station. It wasn't much more than an elliptical and a set of free weights, but a couple of the officers used it regularly. Maybe we could bond over cardio. Doubtful, but at this point, I'd try anything. After tossing in a load of laundry and reading through the case files I hadn't last night, a drunken disorderly, a petty theft, and a vandalism of a Santa display last Christmas, I headed to the station. Officer Smith was ready and waiting at his station in the lobby to give me his standard cold welcome. "Good morning, Officer Smith." Nothing. Asshole. His first name was Tom, but he and I were sticking to last names. He seemed to hate me more and more with each passing day. Eventually, he'd have to get to know me, right? Maybe that attitude would thaw when he realized I was here for the long haul. Or early retirement. He was getting a few more weeks to shape up, then I was pitching him an early retirement. My desk was its usual disaster, but I'd blocked off the morning to tidy up. I spent hours putting files away, going through emails and my long to-do list. And finally, by noon, the brownish-gray wood was visible. I really need to do this at home. Settle in. Clean up. I swiveled my chair to the window at my back, taking in the forest beyond the glass. The station was nestled between a grove of pine and fir trees, their trunks so wide I wouldn't be able to wrap my arms around them. The branches provided a canopy over the building that kept the sun from streaming inside. I'd been so busy sinking into this job, I hadn't spent time looking out the window, a mistake I'd remedy in the future. Like my quiet street under the moonlight, there was a peace to be found in those trees. Now that I was settling in, piecing together a routine, it was time to put my house in order so that when I walked through the door at night, I could simply breathe. A knock at the door had me turning from the window.
"Whoa," Pops's eyes widened as he came into the office. "You've been busy."
"Protective morning," I smiled. "What are you doing here?"
"Thought I'd invite my favorite chief of police to lunch."
"Good, I'm starved. And afterward, I need to head to the courthouse, get my vehicle registration switched over, change my driver's license. More steps to making this move official. Once the Durango was registered, it would be in the garage the majority of the time. I'd been hesitant to use the former chief's unmarked Explorer because it smelled like cigarettes, but after a thorough detailing, the stink was beginning to fade.
"Meet you downtown?"
Pops asked. "Where to?"
"Eden Coffee."
Griffin's sister's business. A spike of nerves hit, but I nodded and followed Pops out of the station. Like our last lunch date, we had to park off Main and walk. "It's cute," I said, taking in the green building. Eden Coffee was emblazoned in gold letters on the coffee shop's front door. The black-paned windows gleamed in the June sunshine. A chalkboard sandwich board stood on the sidewalk, the swirly lettering outlining today's specials.
Even from beyond the door, the scent of coffee, vanilla, sugar, and butter filled my nose. Now I'm really hungry.
You haven't been here yet?
He asked. I've been sticking to coffee at home or at the station, hoping a few encounters with the officers in the break room would give us a chance to bond. And I didn't realize they had lunch.
Lila makes amazing food. Sunday morning, let's meet here for breakfast. Her pastries are the reason I'm getting a gut.
I scoffed and smacked his barrel of a chest. Please. He chuckled, opening the door for me. A bell jingled overhead, and the moment we stepped inside, I nearly collided with Frank.
Hey there,
Frank beamed, pulling me into a quick hug.
How's it going, cutie?
Good, I smiled. Pops and I were just going to eat lunch.
Same here. I just walked through the door and was searching for a table. Join us,
Pops said, motioning toward the counter. I moved to follow them, taking in the restaurant. The interior was painted the same shade as the exterior, giving it a moody, modern feel. Beside the counter were glass cases of pastry.